Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by Sam, and we're going to be discussing the middle third of the Shazam! World's Mightiest Mortal... Man, that's hard to say. Shazam! World's Mightiest Mortal Volume 2 Hardcover, which is covering Shazam's issues 28 through 33 of the 1970s series. Sam, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful, man. How are you?
I am doing good. I am enjoying this run of Shazam, and it's funny because as I was prepping for this, I actually did a little bit of research into what the different ages of comics were. And I found a couple of different things, and, you know, obviously there's the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze, and then after that, there's either the Modern Age, or it gets broken down to a number of different chunks, depending who you ask. But I was looking at it because this is one of those comics that is technically, I think, well into kind of that Bronze Age, but it's still got a very Silver Age feel at times.
I tend to agree with that.
And I think that was one of the things where this title in particular, and we talked about it when we covered the first third, was really trying to figure itself out as to what it was and wasn't and such. And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer, but I'm also curious when we eventually get to that third hardcover where they start covering the stuff from, I guess it was World's Finest or wherever the title migrated or the property migrated to after this, if it becomes a bit more of a Bronze Age feel by that point. Because there were a couple of stories, some of the later ones in here, where definitely it was kind of the wacky Silver Age kind of fun.
It absolutely was, but we talked about it, even the earlier part of this was very, very late Silver Age, early Bronze Age. The real beginnings of this really felt like the Golden Age stuff.
Yes, yes. Well, and again, it's a Golden Age property that they were reviving for the first time, and when you've got C.C. Beck still doing the art and stuff, that gives it the visual feel of the Golden Age, and I think that was the sort of story they were intentionally telling.
Yeah.
So that goes towards, I don't want to say a confused aspect of this title, but a very flexible one, we'll say.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because it could do the Golden Age type stories. It can clearly do the Silver Age type stuff. And I think by the time we get to the final third, even of this, we're going to start to feel a lot more Bronze Age. And I'm cool with all the different takes on the character, and it's not jarringly different across them.
Yeah.
But the sorts of stories they tell, definitely, I think, for me, is what gives it the feel of a particular age.
Yeah.
Now, this first issue we're talking about, number 28, has a cover feature of, you know, Black Adam back, but that's impossible, he's dead. Because, well, I forget which issue it was we'd read, and I think it was the previous hardcover, where he was brought back and got tricked into saying Shazam, and oh wait, he's 5,000 years old. He kind of crumbled to dust pretty quickly. But here, this is picking up with a plot device from the previous issue, where Savannah had a reincarnation machine. And I don't know why it took him so long. I mean, he had the full... He resurrected a lot of people last issue before he realized he should bring back Teth Adam, who could go one-on-one with Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And of course, Black Adam, you know, once he realizes the only thing that could send him back or do him in or whatever is the resurrection machine, he promptly destroys it. And I'm like, I'm actually curious, could Savannah just build another if he wanted to? Presumably, don't know. But that's the kind of thing that in just a page or two, it's like, hey, we're going to bring this guy back. Boom, here's how we do it. Let's move on. You know, they don't waste time in these stories. And I did think it was kind of clever of Savannah to convince him to go after the wizard Shazam, since that's, you know, the main threat to him, or to Black Adam or whatever, realizing, although Black Adam didn't immediately, that that would cause Black Adam to lose his powers as well. So... I'm always a little confused as to who knows what in some of these stories.
Well, it's not really clear, and it changes, and, you know.
Because Savannah seems to know the Captain Marvel family pretty well.
Yes.
And I'm not sure how much of that, I mean, some of that, obviously, he's learned through these adventures we've been reading. some of that obviously from the Golden Age stuff back in the day. But this quickly gets to Black Adam heading off towards the Rock of Eternity and then doing, you know, Captain Marvel following, and suddenly we're in, what is it, the Revolutionary period and the Boston Tea Party?
Yep, absolutely, the Boston Tea Party.
And of course we've got, and you had mentioned this before we started recording, we've got the full page splash of, because Billy asks, hey, wait, you gave him the powers before some of these gods I get powers from existed, or were popular, or whatever. Who's powering him?
Yep.
So we get a full page splash of the Egyptian gods that power Black Adam.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Even though, I gotta admit, it didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm not up enough on the Egyptian gods to know what would have been a better set or how many options there were for some of those letters.
I don't know that. Here's what I can tell you. The four I'm most aware of are the four with their names in parentheses and not the ones they actually used. Those are actually the four I can name and tell you exactly who they were.
Anubis, I'm mainly familiar with because of Stargate.
Yep.
Toth.
Toth. Yeah. Amon really is the other one who was like their Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it was, again, I'm not sure if they were good ones to pick or not.
The first one, again, they needed an S, but I always thought that was Ra who was rode the sun across the chariot and supported the sky in Egyptian myth.
Ra was the sun god. I don't know if there was one that did the sky versus sky. Yeah.
Fair enough.
They had a very interesting Venn diagram to kind of deal with here, because first you had the set of Egyptian gods to pick from, then you had the letters to spell out Shazam, and then you had the power set that he's exhibited that you've got to kind of fill in. So getting those to kind of come together.
Yeah.
I'm curious how long it took the writer to figure that out. That was Bridwell.
There you go. Thank you.
E. Nilsson. So he's pretty smart fellow. I don't know how up he was on his Egyptian gods before figuring that page out, but I'm sure there was some discussion to be had on that.
Yep.
But nice of them to at least acknowledge that.
Yeah, it was odd. My wife happened to look over when I was reading that page. It's like, I thought Shazam was based on Greek gods. And I went, well, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't that list anyways.
Well, and I think at one point when Freddy became Captain Marvel or Shazam or whatever title he went by after Junior, he had a slightly different power set with a couple of different people filling in or something. In other words, I think we've seen a variation on this page with a few different sets of gods at various times in the decades. Again, kind of cool. Overall, I thought this was a fun story that just kept moving. You know, the speed with which these stories go, without feeling rushed, but it's like you skip a page and you've missed a plot point or two.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? The one part I was a little disappointed with, but part of it was kind of fun too, was when Black Adam goes after Uncle Dudley.
Mm-hmm.
And Dudley, you know, feigns ignorance or whatever, tricks him into saying Shazam again, but because he's been resurrected, he's not going to go poof into ashes or whatever. So Captain Marvel hits him with his amnesia punch. He's got a name for it, so he's used it before.
It would probably work. Why not?
I'm curious what job they set this guy up with, because we find out next issue what happened with Ibak, who's another one who's got, you know, powers and stuff that cause problems.
That one was fun.
Yeah.
A character I actually really enjoyed that I had never seen or heard of before.
Which character?
Prince Lucifer or whatever the devil guy.
Yeah, Prince Lucifer.
Yeah. And Minerva and Ibak, obviously, I was familiar with. I was not familiar with Prince Lucifer.
Well, we've read Minerva in the previous yep. stories. This is the first time I think we've seen... No, I think we've seen Ibak once before in this, haven't we?
I think so, too.
But this is the first time we found out how he got his powers.
Yes.
From Prince Lucifer. And having it basically be, you know, the devil himself or whatever. It was surprisingly, you know, on the nose for the iconic devil sort of, you know, imagery or whatever for this sort of a comic. I was surprised by that. And he doesn't do a ton in the story, but it was kind of cool seeing him.
Yeah.
And the way they play with Savannah, Ibak, and Minerva in this story was a lot of fun.
It was. You got a lot of cool stuff, you know, and just some fun stuff. The classic going over Niagara in a barrel. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah, again, this is just kind of fun, goofy comics and stuff I love and enjoy.
Well, and I loved how Captain Marvel was so busy doing some spare jobs for some folks that he's in the story, but he's kind of the subplot.
Yeah.
But it's not like we didn't see him or anything, and he was doing stuff that, you know, was helpful to other people, like moving somebody's farm and some stuff like that. But it really gave the villains of the story a bit more chance to kind of shine and such.
Well, both the villains and Dudley.
Yeah, because we get to see him as Uncle Marvel again, and I was afraid we wouldn't see much of that since he was playing kind of the mentor role.
Yeah.
But it was kind of fun, particularly when he was going up against Eyeback and stuff, and he realizes, you know, if he doesn't fall for this bluff, it's going to be, you know, kind of bad. So, again, the way the plot just kind of, I don't want to say zigs and zags, because it follows an internal logic, but again, it just keeps moving.
It does absolutely keep moving.
And the amount of stuff, all of these stories are like 17 pages, so they're exactly 17 pages, because they had something else they would usually reprint in these issues and such, but they tell more story in 17 pages than I feel some arcs tell in modern comics. It's just staggering. I think there's a lot that modern creators could learn from some of these older stories and such, even though they're telling very different types of stories with a different tone and feel and stuff, but in terms of pacing, in terms of information reveals and things of that sort, again, there's a ton they could learn, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like it, but you know, you gotta come up with a lot more stories if you do that. You know, nowadays guys can get years out of one of these.
Yeah, well, there's both more story and you gotta have more in any particular story to get this kind of stuff going.
Yes.
Whereas now you just need a basic hook of, well, this guy's out from jail and he's gonna do the grudge match against whichever hero he's fighting, so that's all you need. Fill it with some fight scenes and you know, a few pages of dialogue and stuff like that and you're done. But I think that's part of why one of the reasons I gravitate towards early 80s-ish type stuff, and we're a little before that here, as part of my sweet spot for comic book storytelling. And part of that's where I got in. That's what I acclimatized to. But there's also a matter of, again, just so much more kind of happened in the stories. So it was interesting to see that Eyeback, having been kind of powered up a little bit, was now much more, you know, able to go on par with Captain Marvel and such. It was just some fun stuff here. And I like how when he turns back into, what's his name, Stanley or whatever, he doesn't want to be a bad guy. You know, and it's funny with that character because I've read some stories where when they trick him to say the name Eyeback, it's to trick this guy into becoming Eyeback, you know, the villain, because he doesn't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
So it's a nice kind of reversal on, you know, tricking the powered person to say the magic word to lose their powers. It's trick the nice guy into saying the word to become the bad guy. So, but yeah, it's a fun story, and I think having the different characters and stuff in play all at once, I just enjoyed it. What did you think about issue 30 that had a cover feature of Superman?
Well, obviously I expected Superman and didn't get it.
Yeah, I felt that way too.
But that being said, a panel from the cover could sort of exist in this book, or sort of does exist in this book.
Kind of, sort of.
So it's not like it's an outright lie.
What I liked is they paid off on the other little thing on the cover where it says featuring the entire Shazam family.
That I had mixed emotions about. Obviously, Freddy and Billy and Mary and even Dudley, who I barely in this issue, and Uncle Marvel's not in this issue, I don't believe. Then the random, what is it, Hillbilly Batson, Fat Batson, and Tall Batson, I was not a huge fan of.
This is, I think, the first story I've read that had the Lieutenant Marvels in it.
I agree, and I didn't care for just how cheesy and stereotypical this bunch was.
Yeah, it would have been nice if they'd actually, you know, focused on them a little more, gave them a little characterization and stuff, other than just kind of the cliche. Yeah, he's from the country, and this guy's tall, this guy's fat, or whatever.
Yeah.
But I liked them being pulled into the story at all.
Fair enough.
Because I don't know how much use they really got in this era.
Well, and we've talked about this. I don't really think, again, Freddie and Mary, we kind of all known about and we think of as regular members of the Shazam family. And obviously in the more modern, we've kind of got that whole group of them now that include Mary and Freddie plus several others. I don't know if before reading this, I was aware of there being that many before that.
I was aware of the Lieutenant Marvels, but probably through like a Who's Who page or something of that sort.
Okay.
So I had known about them, but like I said, had never read them.
Yeah.
So I was very jazzed when they get pulled into the story.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was kind of cool. Again, we don't see a whole lot. They're just, you know, we got a bunch of things to fight, so we need a lot of people, so let's bring them in.
Which seems odd. And when we get to the next issue, we'll see. Seems like that would have been the issue. You could have used them all, and we didn't get them.
Hmm. Kind of, sort of. I think either the next one or the one after with the baseball game.
Also true.
Yeah. I think there were other times they could have brought these guys in, but again, having them here was kind of fun.
Yeah. No, it was absolutely fun. I think it was interesting that, you know, we have several issues, like you said, with the baseball game and the next one, and where there really is a group of villains.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, you kind of still have just one villain, sort of.
It's funny because they did an animated Shazam cartoon for Saturday morning. It didn't last all that long. I think around 1980 or so. So after this was done,
mm-hmm.
Man, this is one of the issues I think they really should have adapted. If for no other reason than the song the Marvel family is singing as they're going and trouncing these things.
Yes.
That just seems like a Saturday morning kind of a thing.
Well, and I actually liked this metal, what was it, metal rack or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
But for him to be kind of disposed of so quickly and then just kind of random, you know, like zoo animals was like, really?
Yeah, that was a little disappointing. I felt the animals kind of came out of nowhere, and then the Superman robot or whatever.
Well, yeah, and how the Superman robot is dealt with, let's face it, makes no sense, even in comic book logic.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, this is where I think things are starting to get a little more either Silver Age goofiness or what have you.
Yeah.
We're just kind of roll with it sort of a thing. And again, my only real kind of issue with this is I had expected to see Superman in the story based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the closest we got was a copy of Action Comics shown at one point and then the Superman robot or whatever in there.
Yep. But I'll give them credit. Unlike many current comics, it wasn't just an outright lie. It wasn't the way you expected, but it sort of met that criteria. Maybe you don't see it that way.
No, not really. If the fact that we had Superman in full color and stuff on the costume, there was no reason to think it wasn't.
Fair enough.
You know, I mean, I'm not, you know, totally upset or whatever. It's just they kind of promised one thing and delivered something else.
That is fair. And I guess my point is, well, everything you said is true. I do also think it's true that this and, you know, arguably this entire era of comics, the covers are more relevant to the interior than most comics today, which I do appreciate.
Oh, absolutely. If they had basically just colored the Superman as he's shown in there,
yep.
Then yeah, totally. So, and again, the covers are very much, oh yeah, that's what happens in this issue. If you, you know, are familiar with the issue, you see it.
Yep.
And if not, it gives you a sense of what to expect.
Yep.
So I do like the relevance of the covers. But to introduce a villain, dismiss him, what, halfway through the story and stuff, and then still have the need to pull in the lieutenants and stuff, again, quite a bit's going on.
Well, and that's the other thing, and it continues. While we kind of see all of these cool, neat villains, ultimately, basically, there's only two villains pretty much in 90% of everything we've read to this point. And it's either Sylvana or Mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're kind of behind all these other kind of cool villains. Always.
Well, and Savannah is in the lion's share of it, particularly at this point when they're going city to city, kind of, you know,
yeah.
With him taunting the Marvel family and such, or mainly Captain Marvel.
But in the next issue, I think we're back to Mr. Mind.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Now, the next issue I found kind of interesting, both with the Rainbow Squad villains and Minuteman, because I am just not familiar with Minuteman. Granted, he's a character from the Golden Age that, other than here, I don't know has shown up a whole lot.
I'm not familiar with the character at all.
I mean, I'd have to pull out my Who's Who to find out if he even rated an entry in there, and I'm not sure if he did. But I enjoyed the character. I thought it was cool. It's fun to see, you know, a character like that that I'm unfamiliar with. It tied into some backstory and whatnot that if you know, you know. If you don't, they clue you in. I was a little confused kind of how these this Rainbow Squad got their powers or whatnot, but it was fun, it was interesting, and when Billy's kind of noticing the parallels to his powers and stuff, I thought that was kind of cool. So it was fun, it was different. Yeah. I mean, we see the Rainbow Machine that gives them the powers, but...
Yep. And as far as Minuteman goes, at least according to the wiki page, he was a Fawcett character.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, going back to 1941.
He may have gotten pulled in like a group shot or something like that for either like All-Star Squadron or maybe a cameo or whatever in JSA or something like that.
Well, it points out that he was basically around in the 40s. He was in this series that we're reading now.
Wouldn't surprise me if he showed up ever so briefly in like Powers of Shazam.
Yes, and then it says states after that, the last one, he showed up way recently in the JSA in his death, destroyed by Vandal Savage along with Mr. America, Commander Steel, and General Glory.
Would that have been in the kind of Geoff Johns JSA series?
I think that was Robinson, wasn't it? JSA number 3.
I think that was the series that Geoff Johns eventually got on, and he was a co-writer early on, but not initially.
Yeah, I thought James number 3, though, I think that was still James Robinson, wasn't it?
I don't know that that was James Robinson. I thought it was David Goyer, maybe?
Okay.
Anyways, New 52 at the very least.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, solid New 52 before that.
So if they wanted to bring the guy back, they could.
Yep.
It would be fun to see not a Freedom Fighters kind of a thing, but take Uncle Sam and have him kind of, you know, assemble another team of obscure patriotic heroes like this guy. Could be fun.
And just for the interest of it, I did look up JSA number 3. I opened it up here in the DC Infinite app. And yes, Minuteman's mentioned here. And this is Goyer and Robinson as listed as co-writing credits.
Okay. Yeah, great series, that JSA stuff. And not surprised they touched on him.
Yep.
But yeah, the reveal in this issue here of kind of, you know, Mr. Mind being behind everything, I thought was kind of fun. And they finally explain how he survived being electrocuted from way back in the day or whatnot. The problems of being really smart but having no hands, so you can't make your own weapons and whatnot. And some stuff like that. And of course, he makes his getaway so he could be used yet again down the line. Not the least bit surprising.
Yes. And I do love the servant handyman, who we only see in that one shot from the back, and I'm like, I want to see more design on that character and see more of him.
We actually saw him briefly earlier with the Rainbow Machine, I thought.
I thought that's the only... He's got, where you see the Rainbow Machine.
And he's the guy operating the controls.
Yes, actually, the one shot from the back.
Well, we see him later at the end where he's making the android. From the back.
From the back, yeah.
So, I don't know if we ever see him. I'd like to see more of him, too. I'm curious, because I was unfamiliar with that character, and it seems like a key player for Mr. Mind's, you know, lieutenants or thugs or, you know, his helpers.
Yep.
So, hopefully we'll see more of him before too long.
And again, we never get to see what he looks like from the front, even when he shows up in the next issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sort of. We kind of see him.
The next issue... And the one after it, this is where it just kind of gets a bit almost more of a silly sort of a story or whatnot. And it's funny because this next one with the baseball game, I've seen variations on this from time to time in like the Super Sentai shows or whatever, where, you know, they've got to go fight the villains a game of baseball or what have you. And it's ridiculous as all get out, but it's like, sure, why not? It kind of sort of works. And the way they got the story going with Talkie Tawny and stuff joining the baseball team, I thought that was great.
Well, Well, and of course, Tawny had to join the Detroit Lions, or Tigers.
Tigers.
Of course. Why not? Where else would he be?
Well, and I loved how when they were deciding, do we get him? It's like, oh, he's not the greatest player he's turned out. And he's like, well, he's not the worst either. And again, for the PR aspect, it's like, yep, let's go with him. Can't argue with that.
He's good enough to sign and a genuine Tiger.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know what possessed Mr. Mind to force the baseball game, but, you know, he did, so, okay.
He's going to prove he can beat humans at their own game, and therefore they must surrender. He says it right out.
Yeah, but why?
Well, it's an old-fashioned duel, right? It's your game. If I win...
I win, I get the planet? It's like, where did that come from? But I loved the page after that, though, where we get the players on his team.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, these guys are just wacky.
Oh, yeah.
The guy with a ton of feet, the guy who's kind of stretching, the pitcher, I'm not sure what his deal was or whatever, but these were some inventive aliens.
Absolutely.
I mean, goofy as all get out, but...
And like I said, we do get to sort of see Handyman from the front here, but again, covered by all the gear as the catcher.
Yeah.
I do love Great Skate.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he just has roller skates in his feet, which is kind of a neat superpower, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's only the two wheels or whatever, but yeah. But yeah, it was kind of fun. I liked how Captain Marvel had to go check in with the elders to see, it's okay if I go deal with this?
Yes.
I gotta go join the team officially. Say, oh, well, donate the money to charity. It'll be all right. It's like, okay. They're making a lot more use of the Eternity Phone than I had expected. And for something that was just taken from the Saturday morning live action show, you know, they leaned into it.
Yeah, they've been using it a lot in these last few issues.
So, but what I thought was a little ridiculous, but I should have expected it, was Captain Marvel having to turn back into Billy to, you know, go call in a report or whatever, you know, be there as Billy, which allows him to get captured, which actually I think is Handyman doing it.
Yes, it is.
So we actually see his face ever so briefly.
We do.
But, I mean, that's how they take, you know, Captain Marvel out for a little bit to where they can, the villainous team can rack up the score just in time for Cap to have to, you know, be there for the last inning where they're losing 28-2. So it's, to me, this was, again, one of the sort of sillier premises or whatever, but they made it work and they lean into it. This is one that I think would have been fun to see animated, but not in that 1980s series where it was pretty limited animation.
Yeah.
I would love to see a modern animation take on this where they really, you know, go whole hog into the aliens and stuff like that. Do them up like they are as if it were a kind of a Looney Tunes sort of a thing. So, definitely a fun story. And this is where, again, they're able to run the gamut of something like the Minuteman story, which was more or less, you know, straight up superheroics. Here, a little more goofy. And then certainly in 33, that one, it was another, we're going to go have a race, whoever wins gets the planet sort of thing. I forget what the exact stakes were, but why Mr. Mind is doing challenge after challenge here, I don't know, but, you know, he does. The whole Atommobile or whatever, I'm not that familiar with Mr. Atom. I think we'd seen him already once or twice, maybe.
I seem to remember seeing him, I just don't remember exactly where.
Yeah, but his look here is, you know, an armless race car or whatever, was just kind of wild. And it's funny because they actually mention, I thought you were on Earth 1 being hurtled into a distant star or whatever, which is a reference to the JLA-JSA crossover that they had mentioned briefly in, I think, the earlier part of this hardcover. And that would have been JLA, I think, 135 to 137 or something. So again, they've got some continuity going on here. But to have a Shazam-powered car, I thought was just a crazy idea. I thought it was great. The only part I couldn't figure out is he gets some help getting it built or whatever, and he lets the people name it. And it's like, well, what should we call it? And it's like, I know, the Shazam-mobile. Do they know his magic word? Why would they come up with that name? I mean, it's ironically apropos and one that he can't use, but for him to fly it to the racetrack, turn into Billy, and then turn back into Captain Marvel in the car so it gets charged up with his lightning? Brilliant. Don't know how that works, but it does, so I'm willing to go with it.
Yeah, and there's no reason to assume, you know, these young admirers of his and people helping him build the car would know much about his secret word or his powers or any of that.
Well, they clearly know the Shazam thing, because when he lands at the thing at the bottom of page 6, 200 in the hardcover here, the building or whatever it is back there has Shazam on it.
Yes.
So.
Well, and he had just called the elders, and they told him they'd help, so.
Yeah. Well, and he makes a unique special modifications for his unique power source to the engine. Yeah. So he's a lot more handy in the garage than I would have expected, but, you know, it works.
Wisdom of Solomon, right? He just knows everything.
I guess. Keeps up with the times, too.
I also love the, what appears to be, I don't know, 78-year-old boy running the welding rig. No visor.
Yeah, he does seem a little young for that. He may just be handing him the parts. Even so, does seem rather young. But nice, simple design for it, and if you're going to have a Shazam-mobile, that's kind of what I would expect it to look like.
Yep.
Red with a lightning bolt. And then we get the race and stuff. I love how both of them will, now I shall turn on the full power, thinking they're going to, you know, outmaneuver. I mean, we get a small Fast and Furious kind of scene here or whatever. It's kind of funny. But this was the one that, you know, after the race, he's still got to go fight Mr. Adam or whatever, because he's still a threat, deal with that. And it looks like Uncle Dudley actually captures Mr. Mind, but I don't think that's going to slow him down because, you know, given how often Savannah escapes from jail and whatnot, I'm not too impressed with their incarceration system in this world. But, again, fun story. Very, again, kind of Silver Age goofiness to it, but that's fine.
Yep.
You know, it fits the character. It doesn't feel out of place here. And, again, it just shows the range of what they can do with the character.
Absolutely. And, yeah.
So I'm enjoying these. I think it's good they put this on its own Earth to where it can do things like, you know, the JLA-JSA crossover or whatever, but still have its own style and sensibility in this title.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious how much longer it has that, because just looking at the cover of the next issue, that feels a lot more Bronze Age looking than what we've been getting so far. And it may just be the cover artist.
Well, the art carries through the issue, and it's Alan Wise and Joe Rubinstein, so it's a very different feel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, you'll enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to when we get to it.
Yeah, should be fun. Again, I think Captain Marvel is a great character, and one that I think DC has historically had some challenges figuring out how to handle and what to do with.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they go with just straight up superheroics, and when he's in Captain Marvel, he's just a, I don't want to say another Superman, but he's a peer of Superman. Other times, they really play up, he's a child in a man's body.
Mm-hmm.
And that aspect, they go more for the humor and whatnot, and it doesn't always work as well for
him. I can see that. Like I said, these are just fun and goofy, and they will continue to be fun and goofy, but they're turn into the DC universe a little more in the coming issues, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I kind of expect that, particularly when after, because we've got two more issues of this, and then a collector's edition thing that I think teams him up with Superman properly, and then we get into the third volume and such, where, again, it's a feature that was in, I think it was World's Finest or whatever.
Yep.
So I'm expecting at that point it's going to have more of a kind of Bronze Age kind of feel to it. And it's just how gracefully do they make that shift. I'm looking forward to it, though. Like I said, fun character.
No, yeah, these have been great. Really enjoyable, and I got to thank you for recommending it. I never would have thought of this in a million years, but I'm loving it.
Yeah. I had actually picked up those World's Finest because it had things like the Shazam stuff and just not gotten around to reading them. And then when I realized that they were coming out with these hardcovers and I could actually read the 70s series that I'd never read, it's like, yeah, I got to do that.
Yep.
Now, if any of the listeners know where I can find more stories with the Lieutenant Marvels or like Minuteman and stuff, let me know. I'm curious to learn more about those characters and kind of some of the other lesser used Fawcett heroes and such. So, because again, I enjoyed back when I had read it ages ago, that JLA-JSA crossover, with, I guess it was the Squadron of Justice from Earth-S.
Well, yeah, and I don't think DC, while I believe they own the rights, they've never gone back and reprinted any of that, you know, like the Master Comics and, you know, some of those Fawcett titles from the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, I don't think they've done like a DC archive or anything on some of those.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that is royalties or other kinds of logistics and stuff like that, or just not having the source material or what the holdup is.
Mm.
Or just they're afraid of, you know, because at one point this character was as popular or more popular than Superman. See if they've got concerns about that. Because having two characters that popular, that could just be problematic, I guess. I don't know. It seems crazy. Seems like a good problem to have.
Yeah, and I've never seen these, but I've always been interested in the original Captain Video, which was a Fawcett character as well.
I'm not even familiar with that character. I mean, I'm passingly familiar with, like, Bullet Man and either Bullet Girl or Bullet Woman or whatever. I'm trying to think who else was in the Squadron of Justice in some of those. Crime Smasher or something like that. And again, they've got a wealth of characters that they're just not really using at DC, and now that they've really brought back the multiverse and stuff, hey, go kick them onto their own Earth if you want to and want to do it there, or integrate them in or something. So there's a lot of toys they should be playing with.
Yes.
Anything else?
No, I'm good.
Cool.
The September previews came out on August 25th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 166 is the morning of Saturday, September 4th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.